It's going to be a wild ride. So buckle yourselves in.
Hello and welcome to Strumash, the podcast of the NFL Scotland team. Without the voice of our very own highly prized free agent who's currently talking to the Denver Broncos, they need a mascot. Cameron's available. We're hoping to make the deal. We shall see as that goes along. I am joined by three of Scotland's finest NFL voices. Gordon McGuinness, who, as in this talk about Scottish parlance, has had his dinner. Charles Patterson, firefighter extraordinaire. And Ian Stephen, in which any direction he can go in. Gentlemen, brilliant to have your company. We're back to talk about free agency. What we're going to do is we're going to talk quarterbacks because there's been a little bit of quarterback movement.
Before quarterbacks, though, let's properly acknowledge why Cameron is not here. It's because he's absolutely shat the bed. Because while the 49ers might be hashtag faithful to the Bay, they're not faithful to keeping an eye on their accounts, and they've lost a draft pick and had another draft pick been forced down because they can't keep an eye on their books. And because he cannot handle criticism of his team, he's not here.
Has he literally pooped the bed? Because we know his injury history.
He does have previous.
Yes.
The rule of the NFL Scotland podcast is never miss one, because you get absolutely eviscerated by everybody else. Yes, as Gordon has alluded to, the San Francisco 49ers and the home of Silicon Valley can't even find an accountant to add up a few figures on an Excel spreadsheet. But they would have come under the salary cap, so they've only been hit with one particular penalty. But hey, cheats are cheats, and we'll remember it comes Super Bowl time. Let's start in Pittsburgh, because why not? Because it is the place to start. They've got a quarterback that's been offloaded to them. It's no longer needed in Denver. They then got another quarterback offloaded to them, which no longer wanted in Chicago. And then they offloaded a quarterback or two of their own. It's been absolutely hysterical stuff. But, and I'll start with you, Gordon McGuinness, are they in a better position than they were at the end of the season?
No, not definitely. In terms of how good they will be in 2024, I don't think there's anything that says they'll definitely be better at quarterback last year. That being said, they are in a better position to have the potential to be much better. Russell Wilson last year, if he plays the way he played last year, they will be better on offense than they were with Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph. And if they play Justin Fields, they'll be better at figuring out whether or not they have a long-term option at quarterback. So I think they've made the right move. If anyone is in our Patreon group, you will have seen that Johnny Bailey, both quarterbacks, he thinks are tremendous additions now that they've signed. Previously, receipts have been pulled up and neither signing was a player he wanted in Pittsburgh, but he has changed his mind now. They're both there. So I'm glad that Johnny is happy.
Well, it's nice that somebody's happy. I was looking at a list on a particular website of 2024 NFL free agents and all the signings that have been done. Actually, it doesn't include Kenny Pickett, I guess, because he was traded rather than being a straight free agent. Kenny Pickett, when he did his press conference...
I don't think his sexuality comes into this, Paul.
Thank you. Kenny Pickett, when he in his press conference, came across, surprisingly, unlikable.
Well, that's why he's gone to Philadelphia. He'll fit right in there.
Yeah, I didn't think he came across particularly well, but that's the way it goes.
He took the huff. He took the huff, didn't he?
He took the huff at the end of last season. Like, he didn't want to be the third quarterback or the backup quarterback. Like,
I mean, you got to analyze the pick in the first place to select him in the first round of the draft, which was clearly a mistake. He was picked above his talent level. There's no doubt about that. But I think you've got to give credit to Pittsburgh for actually cashing out when they did, because I think that they're in a far better position, because we saw that a little bit of Justin Fields towards the end of last year, that actually he could be a really good quarterback in the right system with the right stability. He's been sold up the river, really, in 3 years in Chicago, which isn't surprising given the way in which the Bears operate as a franchise. But he's actually now in a very stable position. And you know, he will be, I think, would it be fair to say he will be the starting quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers by Christmas? I think that's fair. It's more than likely.
So here's where I think the Steelers run into a problem here. on the surface, this whole thing makes sense in terms of, so if Justin Fields plays 51% of the snaps, the pick goes from a sixth to a fourth round pick. Fourth round pick really shouldn't matter, but let's say you really care about that and you want him to just play 40 to 45% of the snaps so you don't have to give up the fourth instead of the sixth. That's great. But the Steelers are going to be in position to make the playoffs most of the year if they don't wind up being, you know, a 5, 6, 7 seed. So that'll happen with Russell Wilson at quarterback. So at what point are they going to make the switch to Justin Fields? So unless Russell Wilson is bad, I don't know that they will get to the point where they make the switch for Fields unless it happens at the start of the season, which it might. But that's where they're going to run into a problem there. That are they going to find out whether or not Justin Fields is good enough to pay money to next year because Russell Wilson winds up playing 17 weeks because they're in the playoff hunt?
I think perspective is very important when you come to this analysis here. And to be perfectly fair, it's more likely that Gordon would dip his smoothly shaved testicles into a vat of custard before tantalizingly waving them in the face of a ravenous bull shark than he would give any semblance of credit to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Hang on, I
Which,
gave them credit. I said it's the right move for potentially being better this year.
no, right, he's starting to
it's
say
so
that. And
grudgingly
figure
done.
And fig it's not grudgingly. Like
Let's be
I think it's the
perfectly
right
honest.
move.
Let's be perfectly honest. The Steelers have now catapulted themselves into contention, if not favouriteship, for the AFC North. They've got an outstanding defense. They don't have just one. They've got two quarterbacks who are exciting to watch, who can cope with the Arctic tundra-like conditions you get in that division once it comes to winter time. I think it's been a fantastic piece of business by the Steelers because we're all heavily critical of Kenny Pickett. I've still no idea why the Eagles picked him up, other than the fact that he's from there. They've just been nice to his mum, so she doesn't have to travel as far to see him. And they've picked up two players on an incredibly salary friendly deal for the franchise, and I think it's not like them. They're not a franchise that wheels and deals like this. They usually bring in their own players, develop them, but I think they've had the best off season so far in the NFL in
I
terms
mean,
of free agency.
they've not spent much at quarterback, but there is a
See,
relatively.
there's always a but. There's always a but. They've not. Just
Damn,
Gordon,
right there is. Damn,
Gordon,
no, because
remove your clothes and admit that the Steelers are now favourites for the
they could
no,
also draft a quarterback this
AFC
year.
North.
They probably should. The Bengals are the favorites in the AFC North, and we'll talk about the Bengals later on.
Now you're deflecting to another team to show that you're not secretly
I
thinking
am
that you
simply.
think the Ravens are the Patriots. You've tried to deflect to
No, I
the
don't.
Bengals,
No, I
but you're
don't.
worried about the Steelers.
No, I don't. I
Gordon's
will.
just seen the improvement index for 2024 off the back of the free agency period so far, which has the Ravens last,
They are.
according
What
to
well, this? But this is
the.
why is this a surprise to anyone? Does no one remember the podcast after the AFC Championship game where I said,
No,
what I'm most frustrated about is that this was the Ravens' chance because they will take a step back last year. I've tweeted about this and I got shit from Ravens fans because I
you've
said,
blocked me on Twitter. I can't read.
so this is not. I think the Ravens will be in a fight to make the playoffs, just like the Steelers will be. I just refuse to sit there and say the Steelers are definitely going to be far better at quarterback this year because the two quarterbacks who they've traded for have a higher range of outcomes that gives them the chance to be better than what they had last year. But they're also two quarterbacks who we have seen be absolute dung in the NFL in the past year at times, not every single week, at times. So there is a possibility that the two quarterbacks they have are pish.
But I hope, Johnny, if you're listening to this, this is music to your ears, wherever you are.
You'll be sitting there getting ready to quote whatever the was it 7-3 the Steelers are in the last 10 games and telling me that I'm rattled. I tell you, the worry I have about the Pittsburgh Steelers, I don't really care about how they do this year as long as they don't win a Super Bowl. The Pittsburgh Steelers, I will tell you this right now. Johnny Bailey, if the Pittsburgh Steelers win the Super Bowl this season, I will buy you 20 burgers. I don't need a bet to get anything back in return. I'll buy you 20 burgers because it won't happen.
Gordon
That
mentioning Johnny Bailey, that's take a drink on the Stramash drinking game.
Hello, Jamie.
Absolutely. Jamie Borthwick has joined us, a voice of sanity as Gordon McGuinness goes off on his Kevin Keegan-esque type rant on Sky Sports. Jamie, we're talking obviously about quarterbacks. Mason Rudolph has gone to Tennessee. Kenny Pickett, for some reason, has gone to Philadelphia. There's not a lot of people that can quite understand that. It's definitely an upgrade in Pittsburgh, and therefore, as Gordon has outlined, they're going to be better. Let's go somewhere else. Let's look at Atlanta signing Kirk Cousins. Now, I don't know about you, but I immediately think they're a much, much better team. I think they were poorly coached last year, and I think he can bring a lot to them at quarterback and in terms of leadership, which I'm not really convinced they've had.
It's a very Kirk Cousins move, isn't it? Like, it just fits both parties. He's always been on teams that are kind of do something quarterback. Fair play to him for getting a nice big contract at 35 as well. But he's got targets there. He's in a not particularly difficult division.
Well, he's in a shit division. We're just being nice to Paul here. He's in a terrible division.
I'm just trying to be the master of understatement. Let me continue on that vein. No, they got better. They've got someone who can possibly find guys like Drake London and Kyle Pitts with a little bit more accuracy and with a little bit more danger about them. And they've got a good running back situation as well there. So yeah, good move for all parties.
If you're Paul Mitchell, though, you must be absolutely furious, because this is the move that the Saints were trying to make last year, only they signed Derek Carr. That, like, when they signed Derek Carr last year, this is what they thought they were doing, was getting the Kirk Cousins type quarterback.
Yeah, but that's hard to disagree with, to be perfectly honest. I mean, Derek Carr was a disappointment, but I think the coaching staff was a disappointment. And as you know, I'm slightly pissed off. We've still got the same coaching staff or the same guy at the head. He's fired so many different people. But Jameis Winston has gone, so you've got to look on the bright side of life. He is now one of numerous quarterbacks at the Cleveland Browns. And Gordon, they also got a cast off from Baltimore. That was a slightly strange signing as well.
It's weird because they don't... Well, so in theory, they don't need a third-string quarterback, but what it would tell you is, one, Deshaun Watson was injured last year, and he's scheduled to start throwing again soon, but maybe they think there's going to be some lingering issue into the season there. The other thing is, I actually don't think they've officially announced the Jameis Winston signing yet, though. Like, it was one of those ones that was reported, and then you wait for, like, the official thing, right? So you get the whole 2 days of the tampering period, which is... just nonce vocabulary, so it really shouldn't exist. And you get through all those, and then you get, oh, look, we've officially signed so-and-so, aren't you surprised? And you're like, yeah, it's great banter, we've known for 2 days. There hasn't been that official signing for Winston that I've seen.
He's gone AWOL. It would be just like Jameis to do that.
Yeah, there could be some more by it's like a failed physical or something. I'm sure it'll turn out that he has signed, but I just...
Or maybe he's just stuck in New Orleans, because that's the kind of thing he would want to do. Or did I you think send him on a one-way ticket on the Greyhound bus?
Jameis has probably landed in Chicago rather than Cleveland, given his sense of direction. So that's possibly where he is. But Kirk Cousins, the big one, Minnesota to Atlanta. Gardner Minshew's moved on. He's gone to Vegas. Tyrod Taylor, excitingly, has crossed the corridor from the Giants to the Jets. $12 million. It's not bad. Sam Darnold is in Minnesota. Does he have a chance to start in Minnesota, or is he just a bridge?
I think he's a bridge, but if you look at what Minnesota have done with taking another first-round pick, they're clearly loading up to go up in the draft. And the question is, how high do they go? So whoever they draft, are they going to be ready to start on day one? It would seem it's doubtful. I mean, there's this theory that that's been espoused the last couple of years, is that Sam Darnold could actually, in the right system, be a fully functioning NFL starting quarterback. I frankly don't buy that. Even at San Francisco, I wouldn't have bought that. So he's got a chance. They clearly think, if you're throwing to Justin Jefferson, you could throw all over the place and he'll still pick balls out of the air. But Sam Darnold is not going to advance Minnesota's cause in that division. There's not a chance. So they're clearly tooling up to go up up the draft. I mean, I don't think they ever stood a chance of keeping Kirk Cousins. They didn't want to pay him. So they've got to, you know, they've got to reboot there.
Interesting. Josh McCown will be his quarterback coach, will be fine. What on earth is going on in New England? Has anybody got any idea what they are going to do? Are they looking, Jamie, more and more like they're going to have to draft someone?
Oh, I think they go quarterback. I know that there's some obfuscation out there about whether or not that they take one of the big wide receivers, probably Marvin Harrison Jr. is available, but no, they take one of the quarterbacks, and it actually all comes down to what the Washington Commanders do it too, as to which one they take. But I think they're comfortable with probably the choice is going to be between Drake May and Jaden Daniels, and they take one of them, and that's how they start over. They've still given themselves a massive amount of headroom with the cap space, so they can get whatever guy it is and then build to suit them. But yeah, I mean, it's weird because we've had such incredible consistency at New England for so long, and everyone's kind of poised and waiting and watching and going, right, how does this play out year one with the full new Patriots look?
Also, I like Brissett as a bridge quarterback. Of all the bridge quarterbacks that were signed, I think Brissett's the one that could, not in the AFC, which is probably the problem they'll run into, but if he was on a team in the NFC, wouldn't surprise me to see him get a team to sixth seed or something like that. Like, he's a solid enough quarterback. I wonder who they go at quarterback, whether or not they would rather it was Drake May that fell to three. Jaden Daniels, with the rate of sacks he takes when he is under pressure, it strikes me if there's any carryover from the Belichick era that there will be people in that building who would be terrified about drafting Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting one to see where he lands. The Jets have picked up Tyrod Taylor again. Who knows what Aaron's going to do, but he's a potential bridge there. Mac Jones, Ian, just going to the Jaguars. I mean, he's going to be a backup. Is that really the last we're going to see of Mac Jones, you think?
Well, I don't think he's going to die, Paul. I think he's.
I was talking more in a footballing sense, but I'm glad you're more literal. That just before you answer that,
humidity. Yeah, can't handle that humidity down there.
It's a bit hot. So the quarterbacks, the top quarterbacks drafted in 2021 and 2022, Bailey Zappi is still with the Patriots. Kenny Pickett's gone. Mac Jones is gone. Zach Wilson remains. Justin Fields has been traded. Desmond Ridder's been traded. Sam Hill's been traded. Only Brock Purdy and Trevor Lawrence remain at their initial teams. But Mac Jones just looks like he's going to be another one of these guys, gets the chance, Ian, but isn't going to make it.
I think he'd kind of backup quarterback written all over him when he came out, and it's just the necessity of the position that pushes the value of players like him up the boards. I mean, he was an excellent player at Alabama. He knows football. He can come in, hold the clipboard for Trevor Lawrence. And if Lawrence is out for a game or two and you need somebody to come in and relief, then there's no issue whatsoever. And it's also a kind of comfort for Lawrence, and that you've got to be very careful with some quarterbacks and egos, that you don't upset them into thinking that their backup is actually trying to compete with them. They need to kind of know their place and their kind of mind, which is kind of the considerations that went on with Kenny Pickett. So it is quite startling just how difficult it is to foresee if you're getting a starting quarterback coming in when you're drafting nowadays in the NFL.
It's wild to think that Mac Jones nearly got drafted by San Francisco and instead they went for Trey Lance. Look how that turned out.
All roads lead to trading your first round quarterback for a mid round pick.
And I guess
I have a hear me out. I'm quite intrigued and think this might have been quite a good trade, is the Sam Howell to the Seahawks, because he's younger or around the same age as pretty much all of the top 7-8 quarterbacks in this draft. He's got 2 years experience. He's thrown 23 touchdowns in the league, and he was playing in an absolute bin fire in the Commanders last year. I think it's an interesting possible bit of value for the Seahawks there.
The really interesting part about it was the way it was worded when it came out, but I think it was from Schefter, was he'll now go and compete with Geno Smith, and everyone lost their mind about this. Like, God, what's happening there? Why is Geno Smith going to be competing? And I think people forget that Geno Smith was good the first half of 2 years ago, and then he was okay, and he was all right. He had some moments last year. But going and seeing what else you can get at quarterback just makes sense. Like, it's, the Seahawks are not... If you're sitting there as the Seahawks saying, yeah, Geno Smith's our quarterback for the next 5-6 years, don't really think that most people in the building actually think that's the case. So just the same way the Steelers went and got Justin Fields, go and get a young guy. If he winds up playing a bit, you see what you have and you decide if you need to draft a quarterback in the future.
What I find quite interesting there, and Jamie, your point was really interesting from the point of view of the Seahawks. I think it's Sporting News who ranked the 22 quarterback changes that have been made, and Sam Howell was ranked at 22 of 22 of the poorest ones of them all. They would say that basically this is just random and he's not really capable of pushing Geno Smith. But I must admit, I found it weird that that was underneath Nathan Peterson and the Giants signing Drew Locke, which were also rated D for doesn't inspire. I think there's a little bit of life in Sam Howell. I think he's worth a little look.
I think he's shite, to be perfectly honest, but I do understand kicking the tires on it. Like, he's young, so you might as well try. But I don't think he's good. Like, I don't think he will be the Seahawks long-term starting quarterback, but at least you're trying something.
He's an upgrade on Drew Locke, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's worth a look. And I mean, Jamie is sitting there barely able to contain his excitement about the possibility of Drew Locke donning the blue for the Giants of New York. That was a random one as well.
Yeah, get a warm body in the building who can stand there while they draft someone probably on day two.
Yeah. Do you think that's where, so like if the Vikings are trading up, it feels like the, and I don't necessarily think the Giants would take McCarthy if he was there at six, but it feels like if I'm the Vikings, that's the team I think I have to get ahead of to make sure that I get.
The Giants have put it out enough that they quite like McCarthy. They've spoken to him quite. They haven't been doing the whining and dining thing that some other teams, including the Vikings, have been doing with them. But yeah, I think they're comfortable for someone to come and jump them and take them because it means that they've got more choice at getting a number one wide receiver, which, having lost Saquon Barkley, they're so, so down on skill positions. I think they're more than happy to take a Malik Nabers or a Roma Dunze at that point, and in what's a fairly deep quarterback class, find someone in the second or possibly even the third.
Wait, did you say you'd lost Saquon Barkley? Where's he gone?
Hell.
All the way to Philadelphia. Fancy the cheesesteak, so off he went.
Oh, really? I hadn't been paying attention, hadn't noticed that. I don't think we're really that fussed about it, to be honest.
He's just an average player for the Eagles.
Like, all the other massive contracts in Philadelphia, you don't need to take notice of him until 2026 anyway.
That was a good comeback. Well done, Jamie.
It's getting spicy now.
Jamie has to project 2 years in the future to have any sort of respite.
This is my new, the 49ers are going to win the Super Bowl in 2025. Mine is the Eagles are going to fall apart in 2026.
Charles, is there anybody that we've overlooked in terms of quarterbacks? I mean, the Commanders signed Marcus Mariota again, just a warm body in the building. 49ers have signed Josh Dobbs to the league minimum as well. The Rams signing Jimmy Garoppolo. I would have thought that when you went for a backup quarterback, you wanted somebody that might actually themselves not get injured too easily. I'm not sure that kind of follows for Jimmy Garoppolo.
Oh, he's just going there for the sun and he'll be hanging out in Malibu. I mean, the biggest move is the one that's not been made yet, and it's the number one pick. And Chicago are going to be drafting again at number one, and they're going to take Caleb Williams. And the great question is he any good? And is he going to be a franchise-altering quarterback? Because they've drafted plenty before who have failed. And the NFC North is really, as a division, it is open. If you look at what they've done, Chicago, to put themselves in a position whereby he can be successful, he's in a far better spot than his predecessor was, or the guy before him, because they've got two now really good receivers in DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. And they've got a running back in DeAndre Swift. And they've got the semblance of a game plan, but we just don't know if this guy's going to be any good in the NFL, because ultimately, you know, number one pick, you would think he's going to deliver, but drafting is, as we all know, it is ultimately, it's a lottery. And has he got the attitude and the ability and the aptitude to be able to do it? That for me is the most interesting thing that's going to happen over the next 3 months. Or over the next sort of year, how is he, this guy who's been hyped to the heavens, how's he going to adapt to the NFL?
The important thing that you mentioned there, I think, is that they have actually put the pieces in place around him. So normally your team is picking first overall. They've either given up a lot to trade up, or they've been really bad the year before. This is the Bears. They were picking just at the edge of the top 10 on merit last year, but they've got the first overall pick because of the trade they made last year. The Keenan Allen trade, they've made some small upgrades along the offensive line, getting DJ Moore in the trade last year. They've got a tight end in Cole Kmet. Gerald Everett, I think, was a good pickup. So all the pieces are there around him that you get a guy in. You know, he's not in the same situation Bryce Young was in Carolina last year, for example, where there was bad coaching, no receivers, not great protection up front. And at that point, it then comes down to how good are the coaches around him in Chicago, and how good is he once he gets to the NFL? How steep's his learning curve? Like, is he ready day one? Does he take a season to kind of get up to speed? But they've done a really good job setting the scene for a quarterback at one overall.
Okay, so I'm going to ask this question of all of you. So I'll run through the top 10 picks, or the top 12 picks probably best. I want you to nominate the team that you think might panic come draft day and try and get themselves higher up the draft board. So let's go from 12 up. Denver, pick at 12. Minnesota, pick at 11. The New York Jets, nice to see them in the top 10 or something for a change, are at 10. Chicago are at 9, Atlanta at 8, Tennessee at 7, the Giants at 6, the Chargers at 5, Arizona at 4, New England at 3, Washington at 2, Chicago at 1, thanks to the Bryce Young trade of picks last year, which I was just looking up again. To get Bryce Young, Carolina parted with their number 9, 61 picks in 2023, 2024 first round pick, and a 2025 second rounder, as well as DJ Moore. So that looks like they gave up a little bit too much. But hey, which of these franchises are likely to panic to try and get up the board? I'm going to go left to right on my screen. So it's going to be Gordon, Charles, Ian, and then Jamie. So Gordon, first of all, who do you think might panic?
Denver, because everything coming out from Denver just now is that they don't feel like they need to force the issue at quarterback. And anytime you're saying we don't think we need to force the issue at quarterback, it means you're probably going to force the issue at quarterback. I think Sean Payton will want to be aggressive and move up.
So I'll come back to you on that with the question, given the fact that Vegas aren't that brilliant, the Chargers are a bit of a mess. Would a quarterback and getting a good one make the difference to them charging and challenging to win their division?
No, but this is the same. Is Jim Harbaugh the guy that helps the Chargers topple the Chiefs in the AFC West? Probably not, but you've got to do something.
Yeah.
You've got to try. Like, otherwise, basically, if you're the Broncos, Raiders, and Chargers, you just have to just put your hands in your pockets for the next 10 years and just wait and see what happens when Mahomes is done. So they need to do something.
Charles, who do you think might panic and try and get themselves up the draft board?
I think the Jets. I think they might try and jump up and get the receiver that they want, because they are in win-bust mode. I mean, they've just signed Mike Williams this evening as we record. So they've got Mike Williams and Garrett Wilson, but he's coming off an ACL, so there's no guarantee of that. Why don't they try and be aggressive and go up and try and get Marvin Harrison? You know, I mean, they've got a quarterback whose window is now. So I could see the Jets going for it and then the whole thing collapsing like a house of cards when it doesn't work. But I think the Chargers might trade down because they've got so much salary cap problem, and they've now got no pieces there. They're going to have to probably try and draw in a few extra picks, and I could see a team jumping up into their spot. And whether I think Minnesota are lining themselves up to go up, but I think the Jets could potentially try and move up.
So that's the Jets at 10. Ian, who do you think might panic and do something daft on draft day?
I think the key to the panicking is going to be how much bluffing the Giants do over whether they're going to take a quarterback or not, because that's going to set everything off. I think Minnesota have already panicked the fact that they've picked up that extra first round draft pick and they're going to package them to move up, because the three best quarterbacks are going 1-2-3 to Bears, Commanders, Patriots. You then get a quarterback who you could argue shouldn't even be in the first round in McCarthy. And that's where the panicking effectively comes in. If the Giants don't take him, then the Vikings, you think, are going to be in the prime position. But the Raiders are outside the top 12. They're number 13. And they're looking at the two teams ahead of them, the Vikings, the Broncos, as being teams that could potentially take McCarthy and Bo Nix, who are the two guys you could see possibly being starters. And it might be the Raiders that effectively panic and try and get above both. Well, the Broncos would be the target. I don't think they could get above the Vikings if they start packaging two first-round picks into the mix. So my bet would be on the Raiders panicking and trying to move up.
And just talking about J.J. McCarthy, I mean, the knock on him was that he didn't really do much at quarterback. He wasn't asked to do too much. How do you then factor in, Ian, if you're trying to assess his talent? How do you factor him? You watch all the film you like, but if he wasn't being asked to do things that he might do in the NFL, it's kind of hard to evaluate.
I think it was when he was presented with opportunities to do things, he didn't make the right decision. I think that's what is the main criticism of McCarthy. So a lot of times he threw into bizarre double coverage that you would never attempt in the NFL, and he got lucky. So it inflated his stats, inflated his win percentage, etc. But if I was looking at going for a quarterback, I'd be looking at going to Bo Nix over McCarthy. I don't know why he's accelerated as much up the board, possibly because it's Michigan and there's so many Michigan-friendly members of the media that are maybe kind of touting him further up. Could be a lot of bluffing. It could be teams that want Nix and they're bluffing that McCarthy's really good and hope that somebody believes it and takes him.
Yeah, it's all the dark arts, Jamie, isn't it? Before I ask you for your team, the dark arts of being able to deal with your local media or to deal with all these NFL insiders who are desperate to get the tweets out ahead of anybody else. And I think it might have been Gordon who may have suggested this either online or in our chat, that they post all the shit of the day that agents want them to post as well as anything else.
It's tremendous. You get the what was my favorite one the other day? It was the Chase Young one for the Saints. He wanted to set himself up for the rest of his career, which he got a 1 year deal. Okay, it's $13 million, but he made more on his first contract, so I don't really get how a 1 year deal sets him up for the rest of his life or whatever. And the other one was, he really wanted to play with Cam Jordan, which is an oddly specific request of, like, I'm going into free agency. What are all my options? Oh, no, there's only one team that has Cameron Jordan, edge defender. Guess that's where I'm going to have to go. It's not a great negotiating tactic either.
It's certainly not the best in the world. But, Jamie, I mean, the media manipulation, it's difficult, isn't it? You're trying to get a story. You want to get the story, but you've also got to publish all the stuff that you'd probably know. And it's got a bad smell to it.
Oh yes. The amount of things that you're asked to just put out unquestioningly. It's a good laugh. It's always good around the transfer window time. So I can only imagine what it's like being on an NFL beat during free agency, that you must never get any sleep. I can't see any other team here that's actually going to want to jump, because I think Chicago, Washington, and New England are going to be asking for the earth. The Broncos surely aren't going to do something silly so soon after having their fingers, hands, arms, torso burnt in getting Russell Wilson. Yeah, the Raiders possibly. I think the Chargers are in a spot that a lot of people are going to target. Maybe the Cardinals could probably, you know, 4 and 5 could both trade back, actually, the Cardinals and the Chargers. But I think the most likely, it has already been said, to jump up and way, way, way overpay are the Minnesota Vikings. Whether that's Defias to get J.J. McCarthy, which is not going to be worth it, or into the top three, which is going to cost probably 3 firsts, maybe even more.
See if they can get to... So if they could get to 4 and all it cost them was like 11, 23... and, you know, like next year's 3rd or something like that, then I think they've been quite clever about the way they've done, like, the double trade-up. So rather, you know, they've paid the small amount to jump up and get to 23, so that you then have the ability to be like, oh, look, here's 2 shiny first-round picks. And also, they're high enough whereby there's no... So when you go and trade with a team and you offer next year's 1st, they don't really know where that's going to be. Trading for the Texans 1st last year, you'd have thought they were picking in the top 10. They turned out to be picking, like, 20... Were they? Oh, they were 23.
27.
Yeah, 27, that's right. So like, that's why getting the pick you have now kind of makes a little bit of sense. So I don't think they would have to overpay to go up and get McCarthy as much as previous teams have had to, because they've gone and got that extra first round pick.
And let's be honest, trading away your picks comes with just such difficulty. I mean, you look at the Cardinals have butchered things, the Jets have butchered things in recent times. Carolina may or may not butchered it with Bryce Young. I think we need to give him another season to see whether or not. That's all the quarterback chat. We're going to move on and we're going to ask the guys to talk about something they like out of the free agency so far, any position, any team. Before we wind this podcast up, let's have a look at Charles. Charles, you mentioned that you might want to speculate a little bit about the Vikings.
Well, just generally, I mean, you know, we've talked about the Darnold situation and whether they trade up. And I actually love the fact that they've just gone and done what Vikings teams seem to do quite a lot and just taken sloppy seconds off Green Bay. I love the fact they've taken Aaron Jones on a year's deal, because he's still got loads in the tank. He's an immediate upgrade there. And whoever is the quarterback there is going to be able to lean on a guy that, if he's fit, is a really talented player. And we forget that they've arguably got the best 1-2 combo at receiver in the league, perhaps with the exception of Cincinnati, although maybe not for much longer. So they're actually, whoever is that quarterback is not going to be in a bad position, because they've got weapons. The other thing I like is the fact that in that division, I love the fact that Detroit have continued to just pile it on, and they've continued to make positive moves, because they clearly think that they can get back to where they were this year in the championship game. So the division is shaping up to be a bit of a bruiser, if Caleb Williams in particular proves to be the player he's meant to be. So, yeah, I do like the way in which Minnesota, although they've not made the move yet, I like the way in which they're maneuvering it. The other thing I'd love to talk about is the complete inactivity in Dallas. They've done nothing. Zero, zip, zilch. Now Jamie's got a humongous grin on his face.
It's because they don't have a clue.
They haven't got a clue what to do with Dak. They haven't got a clue. And I think, you know, when you consider that this is the world's greatest sports franchise, the fact that they cannot decide what they're going to do because all the power is in the hands of one mad egotist who can't let go because he regards the quarterback as his sort of surrogate son.
Well, it's also because, like, Dak has all the power, right? I don't, as far as I can recall, they can't franchise tag, which is just a horrible position to be in. This, and this is something that multiple teams with the, and I don't know if Dallas have voids in their contract, but more and more these days teams are putting voids in at the end of contracts, and it means that you can't use the franchise tag because they're not officially becoming a free agent, and it also messes up your ability to go back and get comp picks. So loads of teams have done this. The Ravens have done it with Lamar Jackson's contract, I think. There's void years at the end of that. And you put yourself in a position whereby that player is going to have all the leverage when it comes to that negotiation, because you cannot do a single thing to stop them leaving.
You look at the NFC generally, though, and you think, which teams have got better in free agency? And free agency is a bit of a lottery. But which teams that did well last year who would want to consolidate have actually got better? And Dallas did great until the playoffs. They've gone backwards. Philadelphia, you know, were going great guns. Then it all fell down the stretch. Have they got better? It's difficult to really argue that they're better. Have San Francisco got better? Probably not. They've lost Eric Armstead. They've signed Devondre Campbell. There's not much there. There was talk about them trading Brandon Ayuk. There's not many teams in the NFC that have got better, but I think, you know, arguably the three, you know, certainly three teams in the NFC North could get better. And I mean, I haven't talked about Green Bay, and I think Green Bay have just kind of steadied the ship, to be honest. So I think the North's going to be the toughest division in the NFC.
Well, see, I don't think so. I think it'll be the South. I think the South will be the toughest division to watch, and I presume that's what you meant. Ian, talk to me about the Broncos. What's the fascination with them?
I just threw out a random name. I couldn't be bothered thinking at the time.
That's not my problem. You've now got to have a 17-minute rant about the Broncos. On you go.
I think one of the kind of key pickups, I think, is Houston picking up Danielle Hunter. I think that's an excellent sign for them, opposite Will Anderson and that defense. They're going to be one of the kind of darling teams, I think, of people kind of predicting them higher than they might actually finish in the season in terms of overall rankings. I'm also quite impressed by Robert Hunt getting a $100 million contract with $44 million guaranteed. Not necessarily impressed by Carolina signing it, but impressed by Robert Hunt and his agent for getting that amount of money for the kind of player that he is. And also Christian Wilkins, that's his career over. He signed for Vegas. That's where free agents go to die.
that's their tagline, Ian. They've got that on their stationery.
One signing that I thought was actually really quite good was Tyler Badass moving from Dallas to Washington, because that's not just a case of Washington enhancing their own personnel, but it's also kind of decreasing the ability of an in-division opponent who are floundering with players leaking from that roster all over the place.
Dan Quinn must have a very, very small contact book, because he's basically just taken a few guys from Dallas to Washington with him, and not guys that you would call massive difference makers at Dallas. So, interesting, you know, first couple of weeks in the office for him, and just going, yeah, I know that guy, I work with him, we'll get him right now.
I think it's a Tadger test. He's just kind of, he realised that these guys aren't Tadgers, and he's going to bring them in. Because that's the worst thing you can possibly do in any sports franchise, is just bring in a host of Tadgers, because they completely and utterly destroy your season from the inside out.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. He might just be looking to establish the culture that he's looking for, and it's not always the headline players that go across. Gordon, the Bengals, what are the Bengals up to?
Just quietly made some nice additions. They've the biggest tackle combo in the NFL now, I think. So opposite from Orlando Brown Jr., they've added Trent Brown, who is even bigger than Orlando Brown Jr. Some of the players they added on defense, they added Geno Smith at safety. They added Sheldon Rankins on the defensive tackle. Not ironically, you see this every single year. If you look up Sheldon Rankins' best game last year, it came against the Bengals, where he absolutely destroyed them. The amount of players who get signed as free agents, and you look over the past 2 years and find out the game where they absolutely dominated someone, it's the team that signs them, because they just remember it. But they've set themselves up whereby they're picking 18th in the draft. They aren't forced to draft an offensive tackle just because they have a need there. They aren't forced to draft a tight end just because they have a need there. They can just sit and let the board come down to them, and they can take an interior pass rusher. They can take Brock Bowers if he falls. They can go offensive line. They can go defensive back. And they're in a really strong position. They also, heading into the season, they have a fourth place schedule. They have a quarterback who is borderline MVP level in Joe Burrow. And I don't think they'll trade T. Higgins. I think they know that they have a shot to go and win a Super Bowl this year. So they're just they're set up really well to be one of the top teams in the NFL this year.
Jamie, what's caught your eye in free agency with the sort of the headline grabbing quarterbacks?
Fascinated by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers deciding to run it back on the basis of getting to the playoffs, winning a playoff game, to be fair, but with, you know, they were essentially in by default because they're in such a terrible division. So I understand that when you've got to the playoffs, won a playoff game, you're like, right, well, we can't exactly just let everyone go. But I think just re-signing all their guys on decent enough money, I'm not sure if I can see it ending well. And sadly, I mean, guys, we've probably played it down here, but I feel like Green Bay got a lot better. I think Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney were really good, probably overpays, but I think they make Green Bay better. And Philadelphia definitely got better. I think bringing back CJ Gardner-Johnson helped to solve a lot of the defensive issues that...
They've still got the same head coach, though. Season. That's the problem.
Well, the Super Bowl winning head coach.
Yeah, who also helped wreck locker room last season, but...
Yeah, Super Bowl winning head coach.
I think Philadelphia's problems will bubble up to the surface.
Super Bowl winning head coach.
You've been pulled up for this before, yeah.
Was he? Well, he wasn't the head coach when they won the Super Bowl, was he?
He's a Super Bowl guessing.
Super Bowl losing head coach.
Yes.
It's only in Ian's mind that they actually won that game.
I refuse to accept that we lost the Chiefs. I refuse to accept it.
Stay in the NFC East for a second, and Jamie, sorry to just throw some giant shade at you. I really like trading for Brian Burns. I also don't think the Giants are a team who are in position to be making those types of trades because I don't think they have a clue what they have at quarterback right now. And I think it's one of those things whereby if the quarterback situation's fine, then great, it all works out. If the quarterback situation takes 3 or 4 years to be set at quarterback again, you wind up effectively, you're just paying a lot of money to a guy and it's not actually helping you that much.
You know, there are 21 other players on the field, Gordon. It's not just a quarterback out there on his own.
There are, but what I'm... So I probably didn't word that the right way. So you look at what the Texans did with the Daniil Hunter signing, which you liked. That's a team who they know they have a rookie quarterback. They know that rookie quarterback's at least going to be half decent and probably potentially a franchise quarterback. So they've gone, cool, we've got all this money to save. Let's go and spend on defense and spend on players and stuff like that. What I'm saying about the Giants is the Giants are a team who really should be thinking about who their next quarterback is rather than using the resources and trading picks to go up and get an edge defender.
And frankly, if this quarterback class is that good and you're sitting at 6, why the hell not just jump up 2 or 3 spots and get one of the top 3? It doesn't make any sense to me because Daniel Jones is not the future.
Well, you have to have somebody...
And Drew Locke's definitely not the future.
You have to have somebody willing to come down, though, Charles, and I don't think anyone in the top 3 are willing to come down because if you look at next year, the quarterback class isn't as highly touted as this year, so...
Chris, it's not like Joe Shane has not sounded out these teams about.
I think you've got to do it.
And that will have happened at the combine, if not before. And so going into free agency, he was more than aware of what it might take. And I don't think it's something that they're willing to countenance when they're basically having to rebuild everything else. As to the Brian Burns trade, the Giants basically are now a franchise without a face. They have no one really other than a banged up quarterback that everyone considers a bust that you associate with them. They bring in Brian Burns. It's a gamble paying them as much as they are, but it's a very calculated gamble. They needed a pass rush. It probably helps their very young secondary having as good a pass rush as they are now going to have. And it gives them a bit of an identity. And yeah, it's a little bit New York. It's a little bit needing a face, needing someone that you can hang the jersey off of in that media market. But that's what when they were letting two homegrown massive personalities out there. They wanted to go and spend that money on someone who could come in and fill that void. It's not just about on the field. It's about having a size of personality around the place, and that is why I believe they went and did that trade.
To be fair, if you're Brian Burns, anywhere is better than Carolina, frankly. So. New York's so not that much of a step up, but it's anywhere better than Carolina.
To be joining such a terrible team, and I think that says everything.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. But one of the things we'll talk about in the next episode of the podcast will be, are the guys that are likely to go at the top of the draft actually surefire winners? Because as I mentioned earlier on, we look at Sam Howell, Desmond Ridder, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, Kenny Pickett, all first round draft picks either in 21 or 22, and they've already been moved on by their teams. It is a tough old business trying to find your quarterback. Right, before we disappear, gents, anybody want to have a gratuitous go at Cameron for anything?
I heard he ate a baby.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
There was a rumor about tax fraud, but I'm not sure what the details are on that.
I think he's still trying to work that out with the HMRC. I wouldn't like to comment on a current case. Jamie, anything on Cameron?
On the basis that this has to be edited, I'm annoyed that Cameron is not here, because he would have been setting me up to segue into the pre-recorded Praise Alatoki interview that is going out on this podcast, and that we have now not set up because he's not here to do that. So can I tee that up so that he can splice it in, and he's going to have to do all this editing?
I mean, it sounds perfectly teed at this point in time.
Jamie, you've had a chance to catch up with a Scot that's looking at the NFL. Tell us a little more.
That's right, Paul. Praise Alatoki, he is a Scottish sprinter from Kilmacombe. He's been running over first in college in Canada and then for Ohio State, and he decided, you know what, actually I want to be a football player. He's taken that speed, he's kind of built it up, and for the last 2 years he's been trying to build up his skills, and he is now in the international player pathway. He's looking to be a wide receiver, and this week they're having their pro day down in Florida for all the scouts. And hopefully he's going to get picked up and become the latest Scot to be on an NFL roster. So I got a chance to have a quick chat with him, and I started by asking what it was like being in this intensive camp with the other international player pathway players.
Yeah, it's been insane, honestly. It's been so good. It's a lot of work day in, day out. It's like a full-time job, but it's not even a full-time job yet. But it's been a lot of fun as well.
What have you found to be the hardest thing about it so far?
The hardest thing? I think the hardest thing right now for me is sort of being able to retain so much information in my head. Not necessarily the physical side, but I think understanding what I'm supposed to do, what everybody else is supposed to do, while also looking at what other people are trying to do to counter us. And it's just, there's a lot of information that you have to sort of cram in your head and then forget for the next play. And it's just the bunch of that. But it's also a really good challenge that I've been enjoying.
We've been watching the kind of the YouTube videos that are going up on NFL UK, and it looks like there's a great sort of ethos amongst all you guys who are there working together. How much has that helped, having so many guys in the same situation and you being able to really kind of have each other's backs while you go through this incredible experience?
Yes, it's been amazing, honestly. And I think it'd be so much harder, especially for me, if the guys that are here now weren't here now. Because we help each other when one person doesn't know something or one person can't do something. Well, it's like a brotherhood. The others are sort of there to help along the way. And you sort of want to do your best, because it reflects sort of the ethos and the effort and all that stuff for the group. So the guys here have been great, and I couldn't have had a better group of people around me.
What's it like working with Lewis Rees-Zammit? That was one that caused a lot of headlines over here and a lot of people following him. And obviously, you guys looking to train in similar positions. You must be working very close together.
Yeah, no, that's my guy. He's such a good guy. We're in the same apartment. We share everything. We watch film together every night. We study together. We quiz each other. So he's a really good guy. And yeah, I couldn't have honestly asked for a better person to be training with, and just a better friend. Honestly, we get along really well, and he's going to do really well during this time.
To get to the point that you have already from being a track athlete to being one of these players, you know, it's not a huge number of places on the IPP program. I mean, how much work have you had to put in to transfer these physical skills that you have into being, you know, someone who is at the moment, you know, attempting to catch the eye of a full NFL team?
Yeah, it's been a lot of work. It's like I've got skill, which is speed, but I've like break down everything else, everything I'm not used to, and then build my way back up. So it's been a lot of work, but I've also really enjoyed it. I think like just being out with your friends and playing catch is such like a pure thing that you don't really get tired of. So it's honestly just playing catch, but on steroids. So it's just a lot of fun learning new skills. Failing and then seeing yourself succeed after failing, it's can't beat it, honestly.
I just want to go back to the beginning and tell us about you moved to Scotland very young and kind of your Scottish upbringing, and then obviously how that kind of developed into you becoming a track athlete and running for Scotland. If you can just give us a kind of an overview of what their kind of your raising in your childhood was like here.
Yeah, so as you said, I moved to Scotland when I was about five. Been in Glasgow basically the majority of my life. The primary school was in Glasgow. High school, I went to Bellhouston Academy first, and then I switched to St. Columbus, where I did most of my high school, in Kilmacombe. So out there, I played rugby for all of my high school. But also I was still training for athletics, and sort of near the end of my high school career, the coach that I had for athletics, he asked, would I want to move to Canada to train with his son? And I thought, why not? I'm sort of one for an adventure. So that's how I left Scotland, basically, to move to Canada. I was there for 2 years, and then did well and came to the US. So I've sort of, in between all of that, I've sort of played soccer, football, real football, rugby, athletics, and other stuff started in. And whilst doing that, since like the age of 15, I always had football in the back of my mind. If I ever got the shot, I wanted to play. So when this opportunity came about, I had to take it.
Fantastic. How did you first sort of did American football first kind of grab you then? Because obviously you played team sports as well as doing your individual stuff, but what was it about seeing that sport that captured your imagination?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, there was sort of two things. One thing was the Vine era was really jumping at that time. So there'd be like a bunch of like highlight clips on Vine, and I thought that was the sickest thing. So catching touchdowns, seeing the crowd go crazy. And then also one of my friends in high school back in St. Columbus, his brother was in the States for, I don't know what for, but he came back telling stories about going to football games, and just the stories he told there. I was hooked from that point. He was saying, oh yeah, there'll be like 100,000 people just screaming and shouting, the crazy atmosphere. I want to perform. I like to perform. So I always thought, damn, if I can catch a touchdown and there's 100,000 people cheering or booing or whatever, I think that'd be the sickest thing. So sort of social media, early social media, and the stories I heard, I think, made me want to play football.
I remember when the list came out and we saw your name with the Nigerian Scotland flag next to it, and we have this great kind of community of NFL fans through our podcast that we do, and the excitement at seeing that Scotland flag on there was fantastic. How does it feel to know that there's this community of Scottish NFL fans who are now rooting for you and looking out for you to see how you progress and how you go?
Yeah, it's great, honestly. I couldn't have been raised in a better place. I love going back. I go back every year. My family's still there, and I think having that sort of Scottish side is unparalleled. It's one of the best things that I have, and I want to be one of the few people like David Ojabo and I can't remember the other guy who the kicker. I think he's at the Giants right now. And anybody else, I want to be one of those few people to sort of represent the country, because the country's done so much for me and such like a proud nation, small but powerful and proud nation. I want to just do Scotland and Nigeria proud.
Yeah, the chance to talk to David Ojabo is obviously, I mean, he moved over to the States for basketball, but in general, it is quite a similar sort of pathway towards football that he's taken.
Yeah, it's a funny story. I met him for the first time, I think it's the summer 2017. So before he went to University of Michigan, we just randomly bumped into each other and we were playing basketball together, and just he told me, oh, he's going to Michigan to go play football. And I thought that was sick. So yeah, I've spoken to him actually quite a lot of times. So over the phone, in person, yeah, really good guy. Yeah.
Fantastic. Is there anyone, we've seen players now come from IPP and make it all the way. Is there anyone in particular, a present player or maybe a past player, that really inspires you on the journey that you're on?
I think sort of on the program or who's went through the program.
Yeah, possibly, or whether it's just someone that you just love watching playing. It's more open ended. Is there someone that you really aspire to be like?
I think when it comes to like my position, I can't help but say Julio Jones. We're sort of built the same. He's got, I feel like our attitudes are quite the same. Not the loudest person in the room, but sort of impact players. That's who I want to play like. Week one, Jordan Mailata, who's like the biggest star who's came through the program, he came to visit. And it was sick just hanging out with him and hearing his story and seeing his come up. So yeah, just it sort of gives me inspiration and gives me hope that players have done it before, and I'm trying to do it again.
Tell us what the next few weeks and months maybe look like. We saw the kickers working out in Indianapolis at the combine. Mm-hmm. How does it work for the rest of you guys?
So on the 20th of March, we have what we call the Pro Day, which is basically our big dance. All the teams are going to be in attendance, and from there we basically just we perform and then we wait for a call and maybe visit people. But yeah, that's it. March 20th is sort of ground zero, and then we go up from there. Yeah, oh my goodness, I can't wait. I've been dreaming about this for honestly years now, so yeah, can't be more excited.
Brilliant to hear from Praise, and on behalf of all of the guys here at Stramash, we wish him well. That's it from the Stramash podcast. I'm sorry there's not been enough shouting from the host, but we'll hopefully remedy that next time round. For Jamie Borthwick, Ian Stephen, Charles Patterson, Gordon McGuinness, and myself, Paul Mitchell, thanks for listening. Bye for now.